Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome into the Card Chronicle podcast. It is Wednesday for the 11th, even if it doesn't feel like it outside. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Danny Sinnard in Columbus, Ohio. And Dan, it happened. We visited the Sinnards this past weekend. I made it to Columbus, which is something I said I would never do when you first told me that you were moving. Because I, when friends move away from me, I don't like it. I think everybody should live in Louisville forever because Louisville rules and having friends is cool. But you moved. We visited. Has the house recovered yet?
It's slowly recovering. I will have to say, this morning when my wife walked out the door, I told her I was doing a pod, and Kim goes, "I'm really nervous what Mike is going to say about Columbus on the pod today." And I was like, "I think he had a good time." But I mean, I think she knows you, and even if you had a good time, you'll still find one or two things to nitpick at. But
Didn't see Jim Tressel once. Did not. never got to meet Jim Tressel. Craig Krenzel wasn't around. Scooney Penn wasn't there. I don't even know why the fuck we came.
Goddamn pandemic. Nobody's out. but no, it was a fun weekend. It's weird because, I mean, whatever. Me and you have known each other since we were 10, 11 years old. And how many times we've hung out, whether it's, you know, at school, golf trips, parties, you know, whatnot. So it's always us kind of, you know, doing our own thing. But this weekend, kind of for the first time, we got to put the dad hats on together and, our watch our kids play together. So not to be like, you know, corny, but it was a little kind of different hang than we're used to. But I know we had a good time, and I think the wives had a really good time as well.
Yeah, we still managed to do some non-dad stuff too, which was good. We lost $1 billion on Breeders' Cup betting, which is
God,
that has not changed over the years. So that was fun. No, it was we had a blast. The weather was great. Columbus, I will begrudgingly admit, had some cool parks that we got to go to, and it was fun to just be around the kids. And you're right. I mean, my daughter, like, Virginia is kind of in the middle of the kids that were there, so it was a little bit of an interesting thing for her. You and our other buddy Kircher, who came, all of you both have three kids. They're all kind of around the same ages, like around 6 and 4, and then you've got the two little babies. So Virginia was kind of in the middle of all those kids, but it was so cool to see them being like kind of protective of her when she was running around and doing stuff. So now we had a blast, and we got home on Sunday at like 3:30. And there was this whole very real moment of like, what the fuck do we do with this kid now for 4 hours until she goes to sleep? Because like all weekend, we're just like letting her run around with your kids and getting all that energy out. And she was just pooped out every time she got done playing. And now it's like, shit, we got to entertain her again. But no, we had a blast. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I've met Virginia a couple times when she was real young, but to get to spend some quality time up close and personal for 2 days. I mean, not only is she like cute as ever, but she is like absolutely hilarious. She's just like a total ham. She smiles all the time. You can tell that the charisma on that kid is going to be off the charts here when she grows up.
She definitely made an imprint on Columbus. Still talking about her forever. But yeah, we've got Louisville sports stuff to talk about today. It's kind of a weird spot for Louisville athletics right now, because the football season is going in kind of a strange place. It's obviously not going the way any of us wanted it to, wins loss wise, and now you've got the COVID striking the team, postponing last week's game, playing this week's game. It's just kind of a weird thing, and now you've got the basketball team. 2 weeks from today is going to kick off its season with the Wade Houston Tip-Off Classic, the Louisville Bubble event that's going on at the Yum Center. but now they're just flooded with injuries and people aren't sure how to react to that. So it's a weird spot for U of L athletics. I'll be perfectly honest. I don't know what to say about football at this point. Like, we kind of mentioned this on last week's pod, but they are what they are. You know, any shots of having an overwhelmingly successful season are kind of out the window. And it sort of feels like people are more okay with that than they would be ordinarily, just because this was never going to be a normal season. And because, you know, now they've got all these guys who have been dealing with COVID or the contact tracing stuff. And it's just, I mean, you're seeing across the country, teams are struggling to complete their seasons. Games are being canceled everywhere. And it kind of makes it hard to be, I guess, that overly upset about this team being 2-5, or conversely, that excited for this weekend's game at Virginia, even though definitely excited to see the team back out there. But still, it's a weird thing to try and analyze right now. When, how do you analyze a season where like teams are playing one game and having to sit out, teams are playing eight games, but you know, they're not in a conference. It's just, it's all so bizarre. But Cards will play at Virginia, 3:30. ACC Network on Saturday. We'll talk more about that with Keith Wynn in the preview pod on Friday. But just overall with football, I don't know what to say. I'm kind of where I am.
Yeah. And for me, I've kind of transitioned from, like, where you at. Like, I have, you know, I don't really have anything to say. I'm kind of just blah about the whole thing, to where I'm starting to get angry again because of the lack of leadership with the NCAA. Just because what we're seeing across the nation in football, I mean, God knows how many games are canceled due to COVID this week. You know, we don't know how the season's going to play out. Obviously, there's going to be some teams that play, you know, maybe a full schedule, and teams that barely play any games. And you can just totally see it from here that this is going to transition right over into basketball. And it just feels like the same thing is going to happen with basketball. And I'm like, before it even happens, I'm already starting to get pissed off about it, just because, you know, just I'm looking forward to basketball so much. And I just know that we're going to have cases where, you know, teams are going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks. It's going to be a choppy season, and it's going to feel, you know, kind of similar to what we're watching with college football, which doesn't feel like a real season. So, you know, yes, I'm excited, just like you, to watch them play Saturday. Obviously, having the record that we have right now, I would call this season disappointing, but am I like totally losing sleep over it? No, I'm not. But you know, we still have a chance to win out with the games we have remaining on our schedule, but it all just kind of feels like, hey, let's just, you know, improve these last couple games, you know, and then head into next season with a little bit momentum. That's kind of, you know, the hat I'm wearing right now.
I think the difference with basketball is, because the basketball, you're totally right, there are going to be even more canceled games on the basketball side of things. The rules are even more stringent. The NCAA has taken more of a heavy hand because, again, the NCAA doesn't really control college football. They leave it in the hands of the conferences. They share all the wealth from the college football playoff. But the NCAA, college basketball is its cash cow. In particular, March Madness is its cash cow. 85% of its revenue from any given year comes from the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which is becoming, with the new TV rights that are going to go into effect here pretty soon, it's going to pass the $1 billion mark. It is quite literally a $1 billion event for the NCAA. So they, of course, are a little bit more involved when it comes to the rulemaking for college basketball. But the rules right now are laid out in a way that there are going to be games canceled everywhere, because if one player tests positive, or one coach tests positive, or one whoever tests positive, everybody shuts down for 14 days. And I mean, it's just like that's, you're going to see games, just teams that are going to only be able to play 10 or 11 games. The difference is the majority of conferences in college basketball are going to be sending five teams to the NCAA tournament. So really all you need to do is make sure that that conference tournament's played, you crown a champion, they go to the NCAA tournament, because that's really all that the NCAA cares about. And really it's all that a significant chunk of American sports fan care about, is having that NCAA tournament get played. So I think you're going to see a scenario where you have a lot of lopsided schedules. You're going to have some teams from conferences that play zero non-conference games. I saw the Patriot League came out with their scheduling plan, and it's a small conference, but they're not even having all of their teams play every opponent. They're having teams play the schools that are the closest to them geographically 3, 4, 5 times. Like that's I saw Boston U and Hartford are going to play, I think, 6 games this year or something. And you're going to see quirky little schedules like that that won't really matter all that much because a lot of these leagues are one bid league where whoever wins the tournament is all that matters anyway. And I think you're going to see those leagues send one team. You're going to see, I mean, just impossible task for the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee comparing the resume of like a bubble team that's, you know, 14-12 from a major conference versus one that's like 11-1 from a mid-major conference and how they deal with all that, I don't know. I think you're going to see a just very, very large amount of these bubble teams, the at-large bids, go to the major conferences even more than usual because you just kind of are going to have to default to that. So I think college basketball can still get to its end point more easily than college football can because right now, look at these playoff projections. You've got some people who have, you know, 8-0 BYU in and then 1-0 Oregon in because Oregon's going to play like 6 games and not play anybody, but they're probably not going to lose. It's just I feel like it's going to be easier to do for college basketball, even though they're going to be more cancellations and you've got more teams because all that really matters is this gigantic tournament. But with football, man, it seems like the sport's limping to the finish line there.
Yeah, and I do agree with you on that point. Like the end game for college basketball is, you know, just the March Madness tournament. Like just get there, and there's probably easier ways to kind of evaluate getting that many teams in versus, you know, in college football, just choosing 4 teams when there's, you know, X amount of games played versus another team with X amount of games played. But I mean, the tournament was canceled in March and we've had all the way until October. We've had 7 months to come up with some sort of plan. And I mean, we're a couple weeks before and there's teams, obviously, you know, stuff's out of their hand with COVID, but you know, they're canceling their bubbles and it just seems like just such a shit show right now when I feel like there could have been a more firm plan in place, but I don't know. That's kind of my rant, you know, for the day, but that doesn't mean I'm not excited for the season. Cause I totally am.
For sure. And the season's going to tip off, not just for Louisville, but for everybody across the country on November 25th, which is 2 weeks from today. Louisville, I mean, let's just go ahead and talk about the big issue pertaining to the team right now, which is everybody's fucking hurt. And it kind of feels like we avoided this. I know that we made light of this fact a couple of weeks ago. I was talking about every college basketball fan or really every sports fan feels like their team suffers an inordinate amount of injuries compared to the rest of the country or the rest of the league or the rest of the whatever. But with Louisville, we've actually been okay the last couple of years. I know Malik Williams had his injury to start last season. In Chris Mack's first year, it felt like we dealt with no injuries. David Paget's year, it felt like we more or less escaped injuries. This is kind of a throwback to the Rick Pitino era where, you know, you got those stories being written about by C.L. Brown about are they practicing too hard? Remember he quoted Larry O'Bannon who said like, you know, I could hardly dunk by the time the season rolled around because my legs were so tired. And then Rick just like fucking railed on him at the press conference. Day. Like it feels like we're kind of a throwback to that because we've got Malik Williams now is going to miss the first, I mean, pretty much what, 3 months of the season. He's out for 12 weeks at least with another right foot injury. Charles Menlin, we found out a couple of days ago, is going to be out for 6 weeks because of a sprained MCL. Josh Nickelberry is dealing with injuries that I'm told are pretty significant. Samuel Williamson is still being kept out of practice. At least he was at the beginning of this week. Because of various injuries. And I mean, those are three guys that I would have expected to start. Certainly Williamson and Malik Williams were both going to start. I think Charles Menlin would have competed for the starting spot at the four, and Josh Nickelberry was going to get big time minutes at the two, still will at some point this season. But I'm with you. I'm really, really excited about the start of the season, but these guys just kind of have to survive these first few weeks now because it is it's a tough non-conference schedule. We talked about that last pod, and man, like depth is not as much of a luxury with this squad as it has been certainly last year. And I would even go back to like the late Pitino years and even the David Paget year. Some guys are really going to have to step up. Carlick Jones is going to have to be as good as advertised. David Johnson's sophomore leap is going to have to be as significant as we all hope it is. And then some guys that we're really not talking a whole lot about are going to have to be much, much better than we're giving them credit for if this team is going to survive the first, I don't know, month and a half of the season.
God damn it. I mean, is this – this is just the absolute – I mean, I think I said 2 weeks ago on the pod, like, They're like, what's the key to U of L? I said, we need to bubble wrap Malik and make sure he's healthy, just because I don't know how much depth we have behind him. And it's like God was listening in on the podcast and was like, hey, 2020 is not bad enough. Let's go ahead and put him on the shelf for 3 months. I mean, just an absolute just kick in the nuts, really. I mean, with him and Midland, and, you know, hopefully, I don't know what the word is on Nickelberry or Sam, but I mean, that's just a huge blow. I don't know. There's really no else other way to put it. I mean, at this point, we're just guessing, you know, what this team is going to look like. Anyone that, you know, thinks they know how Louisville is going to project this season is totally guessing, because we don't know how much some of these guys have improved. There's going to be guys playing significant minutes for us that obviously haven't. You know, guys like probably Quinn Slezinski and Aiden Agahan are probably going to have to step up, you know, and play a significant role on this team for the time being. And I'm not saying they can't. I just have no idea. I mean, from what we saw last year, it looks like they have, you know, a long way to go. But a lot of times, biggest improvement comes from freshman to sophomore year. So you never know, but there's no other way to put it. I mean, the Malik loss is just huge. I'm just totally bummed about that. I'm bummed for him. I know he was probably looking forward to this season. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure Chris Mack's not going to make excuses, but it's obviously going to be tough sledding going forward, you know, through this first half of the season.
It really is. And it does kind of change my expectations for the first, month of the year. I hope that we don't get too, I think you have to hope that you get guys experience. They get better. They learn, but not at the expense of wins and losses. I mean, like Jalen Withers is going to have to play a big time role, even bigger than we were all anticipating. Aiden Agahan, I mean, now maybe is your starting center. And we saw last year that he was not, I mean, he wasn't ready at all for big time minutes. So, like, can those guys get better while we're still beating, you know, Southern Illinois and hopefully, you know, beating Seton Hall in that second game. And I think if this team can make it through those seven non-conference games with a 4-3 record, I feel like that would be nothing to celebrate over. But I mean, Wisconsin's preseason number 7. Kentucky is preseason number 10. And then you've got, I think, 3 teams in Western Kentucky, UNC Greensboro, and Seton Hall that are all probably going to be in the NCAA tournament. I know that those wins wouldn't be anything to really hang your hat on from a resume standpoint, but still, if you can win 2 or 3, you feel pretty good about it. If you can win those 3, then I think you're feeling pretty good. The other thing, we found out the ACC schedule this week. It came out in full. So we know those 2 games in December that Louisville's going to have to play between the Wisconsin game and between the Kentucky game. And it's not as bad as it could be. They're going to play NC State and Pitt. So I was worried that those were going to be like Florida State and North Carolina or something along those lines, where you were going to be really challenged without your full roster. And it's a good thing for Louisville, I think, that the toughest stretch of their conference schedule is going to come in February and early March. They play Virginia to end the season again. I don't know why the fuck we have to do that every year with the senior day, either here or in Charlottesville. It feels cruel and unusual, but we're playing them twice again, as we always do. We played Duke twice this year. But that the real tough stretch of the conference schedule, the toughest stretch, I think, comes in mid to late February and then early March to end the regular season. So that's when Louisville should theoretically be at its strongest. So here's hoping. But yeah, these injuries are, you could, I think, handle one or maybe even 2 of them, but all of these guys, it's a thin roster now that's it's going to be put to the test pretty early on. We did get today, we're recording this on Wednesday, we found out the ACC preseason projections according to the media poll and the all ACC teams, all those individual honors and accolades came out today. Louisville picked where I think most networks that do these types of previews have had them picked, which is 5th behind Virginia, who's in 1st, Duke, Florida State, and North Carolina. It seems like everybody who kind of does the tier things with the ACC has said those 5 teams are tier 1 or tier 1, tier 2, whatever you have. And then there's a pretty significant drop off after Louisville. I'm not sure if those expectations or those opinions changed now that Louisville's dealing with so many injuries, but I'm fine with Louisville being at number 5. I don't really have any significant beef with anybody who's above them or feel really strongly about anybody who's below them. Are you more or less on the same page?
At this point, to be honest, with the injuries we got going on, I would actually be thrilled if we finish fifth. And I'm not, that's not to downplay like who's left on our roster or anything like that. I just am so uncertain going into the season. You know, I think five is looking at it right now from a glass half full standpoint with, you know, especially Malik and Charles Menlin, and who knows how long Sam's going to be out. But, yeah, I don't really have too many qualms with the teams above us, but again, if we finish fifth, I would say I would be very happy with that, because obviously, you know, that's going to ensure us probably an NCAA berth for sure. And right now with all these injuries, I hate to say that's the goal, but that really is the goal right now.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I think that if you finish fifth in the conference and you're playing well and everybody's healthy come, you know, late February, early March, then I think you feel good about your chances to make a run in the ACC tournament and then hopefully make a run in the NCAA tournament. And right now with so much stacked against you. And I mean, think about, we're talking about Malik Williams coming back in February and Charles Menlin coming back in late December. Remember, David Johnson came back in late December last year. He had the breakout game against Duke in January, but still people kind of always pointed to that, the slow start and the, you know, not being able to practice in November and to get that experience in November, December as kind of hampering his freshman season. All of those guys who are out right now, or at least the two big guys who are out right now, they're in that same boat. I mean, it's going to take a while for Malik Williams to get back into playing form, even if he does get back earlier than expected, say late January, early February. I mean, he may not be like the 2020 February Malik Williams when 2021 March rolls around. He may not be back into that form. There's just no guarantees here. It's a brutal stretch of news for the past couple of weeks here for Louisville. But as far as the all ACC teams, David Johnson, the only Cardinal to make the first or the second team. He was the leading vote getter on the second team. He finished just behind the first team, which was Garrison Brooks from North Carolina, Sam Hauser from Virginia, Scotty Barnes from Florida State, Jalen Johnson from Duke, and then Amir Sims and Tiny Chris Likes both tied with 50 points. So the six players on the first team, David Johnson on the second team, along with Jose Alvarado, the Georgia Tech point guard, MJ Walker from FSU, Kia Clark from Virginia, and Wendell Moore from Duke. Surprised at all that we don't that we have some David Johnson love, but we don't have any Carly Jones love?
I don't want to say I'm surprised, you know, just because he's a grad transfer coming from another program. I don't know. I just feel like maybe that stigma is on him a little bit. Like, I don't know, maybe the writers think that he would have to earn his way on instead of, you know, someone coming from a program like Radford, just to be stuck on one of those three teams.
Let's put it this way. Let me ask you this, because I feel like on all these teams, all these preseason lists and stuff, like David Johnson's the Louisville player getting love. The word from the Louisville camp for the last 2 months has been Carly Jones is our guy. He's the best player on the team. He's had the gold jersey quite literally all 4 weeks that we've had practice for being the best practice player. Who do you think Louisville's best player is this season?
Oh, man. I would say it's probably going to be obviously between those two. I think our season would be more successful if it's David Johnson. But I don't know. I mean, just from the sound of it, without watching Carly actually play in person or anything like that, you know, I'm just guessing, but I would probably say at this point, just from what we heard, it's going to be Carly Jones. But I would be thrilled if it was David Johnson, because I think as far as potential and what he can do for this team from a creative standpoint, scoring, you know, defense, passing, I think if he was to take over and become our best player, I think that gives our team a little bit of higher ceiling. But, you know, I hear all those things about Carly Jones as well, so I'm not downplaying him, you know, in any form. But I'll say right now it's probably going to be Carly, but I would be thrilled if it was David Johnson.
I think it's going to be Carly Jones too. I mean, I've learned over the years to, when you hear from a camp that this guy's killing it in practice, this guy's been the best player, more times than not, that guy winds up being the best player once the actual season rolls around. So I think David Johnson clearly more talented naturally. He's got better long-term prospects as an NBA player. But I think for this season, I think Carly Jones is going to be your leading scorer. I think he's going to be your best overall player. And here's hoping that's good enough to translate to being a top-tier team in the ACC and being able to compete for, you know, a second weekend advance in the NCAA tournament.
Can we guess the opening night lineup?
Sure.
All right. I think they're going I don't know. I can't decide if they're going to go small and play Jalen as their big guy or if they're going to go with Aiden. I'll say it's going to be David Johnson, Carlick Jones. Man, this is tough. I'll say Quinn Slezinski. I'm hoping Sam Williamson's back. I'll say Sam, and then I'll say Jalen Withers.
I think if Sam's back, I'm going to say it's Carlick Jones, David Johnson, Sam Williamson. I'll say Jalen Withers and Aiden Gahan, just from kind of what I've heard from people who've been at practice. And I'll say this from people who've been at practice, both media members, not just Jeff Greer, from media members and general fans that I've talked to. I mean, they've all it gives me no joy to say this, but they've all kind of been like, this is going to be tough. It's going to be tough early on. It doesn't look like the usual talent level that you see at Louisville. I have heard the buzz about Jalen Withers, I think, is legit. I think that he's going to be, surprise a lot of people since he redshirted last year. I think he's going to be good. But besides that, you've got to find some guys that are going to be able to play over their heads or some guys that can effectively hide a little bit. So I don't know. If Sam's out, I think you see a lineup of Johnson, Jones, Quinn Slezinski at the three, and then Withers and Agahan. I think they really want to have a quote-unquote traditional big. They're not opposed to Jalen Withers at the five, but I think they'd rather have Aiden Agahan there. But we'll see. I don't know.
If there's one kind of silver lining to this, we're probably going to have to thrust J.J. Trainer and Dre Davis in the end of the lineup, and probably they're probably going to get more minutes than maybe they would have. And I love that. I'm a big, like, the more experience you get, the better off it is down the line kind of guy. So I'm looking for I think both of them have some nice potential. Obviously, from like a frame standpoint, it seems like both will have to get stronger, obviously. But I'm excited about the potential, you know, just from A, what I've heard, and B, kind of, you know, what we've seen from them in high school.
With you, and you're right. Getting some minutes with those guys early on will be beneficial down the line. I just don't think that either one, are ready to play big time minutes for a good team that's competitive. I'll say this: if either one of those guys are getting like 15 to 20, then we're probably fucked.
I agree with that. Besides our guy Gabe Winister, he should be getting about 35.
I got some Gabe thoughts coming here. We're going to answer some questions from Twitter. One of them is about Gabe, so we'll talk about that in a second. Before we get to those questions from Twitter, I want to remind you guys again that this podcast is sponsored by our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Home Field Apparel, if you haven't checked out their line of the retro Louisville gear, the shirts, the hoodies, the tanks, it's all at homefieldapparel.com. They've got the Duncan Cartelbird wearing shades. They've got a Scott Satterfield shirt. They got all this cool stuff, and you can get all this stuff with 20% off on your first purchase if you use the promo code Card Chronicle when you check out. And it's not just right now, that's the big deal that we've got going on, the 20% off with the promo code, but we've got more deals coming up in the next couple of months. Excited for Home Field Apparel to release those. So keep it locked to the website. We'll have all the updates there. Follow them on social media. It's Home Field Apparel without an E in apparel on Twitter. And again, go to the website for all their new releases, homefieldapparel.com. And if you do buy, you can use the promo code, not just on Louisville stuff, but on any stuff. Use that Card Chronicle promo code when you check out to save 20% on your first purchase. All right, Dan, are you ready to answer some questions from Twitter?
Let's go.
First one here, let's see, from Adam Eanes. Which walk-on gets the most minutes as a result of the injury bug / potential COVID-19 diagnosis? This is one of those deals where it really hurts us not being able to watch these guys do the red white scrimmage or play exhibition games, because we have no idea really who any of these walk-ons are. Like, they're all new, I think, besides Hogan Orball, who was here last year. You've got the kid from Holy Cross. You've got Ashton Miles DeVore from Versailles, Woodford County. You've got, and I thought this was interesting too. I just noticed this when they put the roster out a few weeks ago. Drew Schultz is a freshman from Rockwall High School, where Samuel Williamson went. And I wondered if this was kind of like the, remember the Russ Smith, Michael Balfour, a.k.a. Dark Slime deal?
Dark Slime, yeah.
Remember Russ was basically like, hey, Rick, put my friend on the team. Rick was like, all right, let's do it. Like, he hasn't played basketball in 4 years, but he's a Louisville Cardinal. He's a national champion. Wonder if
that's, I feel like Dark Slime, like, in one game actually got, like, meaningful minutes. I could be wrong, but I was like, is that Dark Slime in the game? But yeah. I don't know.
I've heard that the Ed Brad Colbert, who's from Ohio, was actually a little bit of a player, so maybe him is who I would go to. Sam Bearden, by the way, is the name of the kid from Holy Cross. My apologies to our colleague Justin Rank, who groomed him at Holy Cross, coached him up, made him everything that he is, turned him into a Louisville Cardinal. But I don't know if any of these guys are worthy of getting minutes. Who knows? I don't know. If
yeah, I would just be guessing at this point. So I'll go with the Holy Cross kid, but I have zero idea.
I like that. The Holy Cross kid, Dan Snard's official. See here. Brent or Eversall, here we go. Yeah, it's November, so you have to tackle this topic, I guess. What's your favorite Thanksgiving fixin'? I'll let you go first.
I'm a big stuffing guy. I'd never eat it at any other time during the year, so it's kind of like a reward when Thanksgiving comes around. So I'll go with stuffing.
I love stuffing. I feel like stuffing, though, is almost like an extension of turkey. Like, it kind of goes with turkey. I don't know. I eat it together. I don't know if anybody else does. I'm a big mashed potatoes guy, but mashed potatoes, not Thanksgiving specific. I'm pretty boring when it comes to Thanksgiving food. I love turkey, love stuffing, love creamed corn, cranberry sauce has to be just right. You got to get the right kind. Love the canned. If you make it yourself, it's a little bit dicey. But if you're counting stuffing, then I'm going to parrot you and be boring and say, I love stuffing too.
So let me ask you this, because you're a Lions fan and they play on Thanksgiving every year.
They do.
Is it always like for you, like Lions game ends and then like you guys sit down as soon as like the Lions take their loss?
Well, see, it changes now. We rotate Thanksgiving with my with Mary's family and my family. So when we're with my family, we do dinner a little bit later over there. And so I always watch the Lions game here. And then it's like when the Lions game ends, we start getting ready to go over there. And then we eat dinner around like 4:30-ish, 4-ish. It's another thing about Thanksgiving. I don't know why we have to eat Thanksgiving dinner at odd times. Like why does Thanksgiving dinner happen at 2 p.m. some places? And like nobody eats Thanksgiving dinner at the time where they ordinarily eat dinner. I don't know how that became a thing, but whatever. But when we do Thanksgiving at my wife's, shockingly, the Lions game is not a high priority over there. like I've got it like on a little TV, like in the kitchen, so I can kind of like see it out of the corner of my eye.
They're like, Michael, would you like anything to drink? You're like, damn it, Stafford.
That's pretty much happened. Like I think it was 4 years ago. We won on a last second field goal, and like we're like eating dinner, and I was like, yes. And like, I had to like walk in there to like watch the field goal. The Lions game is far more prioritized in Rutherford family years than in Bystrick family years. Let's see here. Jonathan Lustig says, is Gabe Wiz going to be a first team or second team All-American this season? This is your guy. You are a Gabe Wiznitzer fanboy.
I mean, obviously, I admit that I do this. I will go back when we get high school recruits and I will watch all their videos and I try to come up with some sort of comp to like either a college player, or an NBA player. And my comps are so bad. Like, I'll never forget when I saw Malik Williams for the first time, I called him baby Kevin Durant. I was like, well, this kid's Kevin Durant. Like, he was making everything from the outside. He was dribbling and dunking on people. But when I watched the Gabe Winston one the other day, I texted you. I said, this guy kind of gives me some Dave Padgett vibes. And you immediately texted me. You go, okay, stop, Dan. But like, I can't help myself. I'm just trying to come up with some sort of player comp. He looks like he's kind of gritty in the post. He's got a little bit of like a push shot in the lane. Again, I'm going off of 3 minutes of highlights from this kid, so I have no idea. But I mean, we talked about it. Like, these are the kind of guys that Chris Mack had at Xavier, and you made a good point. Like, I said, these are the kind of guys they had, and you said, yeah, but usually they sit on the bench for 2 to 3 years and develop, and then, like, by the time they're seniors, that's really when, you know, those kind of, you know, centers that he had kind of shine. So Gabe might get thrust in a little bit earlier and take his lumps, but I'm still excited about him.
They're good for like 2 months, the Chris Mack centers, the prototypical big white, just weird looking Chris Mack center at Xavier was good
the
for like
Uber driver. Yeah.
Matt Stainbrook. Did you hear that story? They only told that a billion times, but like him and like Kenny Freeze, they all kind of like they sucked when they would play for the first 3.5 years. And then like in February and March, they get good out of nowhere. So watch out for Gabe Wisnitzer in the winter of 2024, because he's coming. I don't know if you listen to this. Friend of the program, I'll give him a free plug here. Jeff Greer, our buddy, launched his new podcast on the network that Jeff Goodman and Rob Doster are doing. It's called Floyd Street Finest. He actually released a pod today, I believe, with Chris Mack. So you and I are spieling. You can listen to Greer talk to Chris Mack or listen to us talk about our Columbus trip. It's your choice. But his first podcast, which he took a shot at me like 90 seconds into the podcast. I couldn't believe that he held off that long. But he interviewed Malik Williams, and there was a question he asked Malik about, you know, the progress of Aiden Gahan and Gabe Wisnitzer. And Malik Williams, I mean, you can listen to this for yourself. I'm not over it. It was the least ringing endorsement of a teammate ever. His response to the question about Gabe was to talk about how tough Hargrave Military Academy was. He's like, he comes from a tough school. He's a really good kid. I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, this is not good. I'm sure he's going to be fine, but I just reading between the lines there, I think Gabe's taken some lumps here in his first few weeks of practice in college.
Yeah, I mean, again, he's a freshman. We're not dogging on the kid. I'm hoping, and I'm, you know, whatever, you know, he's going to have a good career, but it's kind of unfair to him if for some reason he is thrust into a significant role this year, you know, because of injuries or COVID or whatever.
Let's keep up here. More questions coming. D. Lloyd says, do you think the U of L women's team can win it all this year? Of course. I mean, they are, what, preseason number 4 in the ESPN poll. They were preseason number 5 in the AP poll that came out on Tuesday. They're the overwhelming preseason pick to win the ACC. They've got the reigning ACC player of the year in Dana Evans, who was a second-team All-American. She should be a preseason first-team All-American. And I think women's basketball has kind of it's gotten away from the there's one dominant team every single year, and it would be a shock if they didn't win. It was UConn most years. It was Baylor a couple of times, even though we beat them in one of those years in 2013. I think South Carolina is the preseason number 1, but they don't seem like they're going to be overwhelmingly dominant this year. UConn's up there at number 3. So yeah, I mean, I think the women's basketball team absolutely can win a national title. It's not just Dana Evans. They've got a loaded freshman class. Breonna Smith and Haley Van Leith, I think, are both fantastic and are going to be stars right off the bat. So yeah, Jeff Wallace, he's loaded again. It should be another really, really fantastic year. Taterbot Casserole says, would you agree that if we ripped out all the chairback seats in Cardinal Stadium and replaced them with cold bleachers, that our football team would be incredible? Bleacher seating equals grit. Grit equals wins. Who says no? Dan, your thoughts.
You're probably going to be shocked. I would absolutely love if we did that. I really would. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, the seats, when I think, like, I mean, college football should be bleacher seats. Like, I just like
the Ohio talking.
Like, I'm a lunch pail guy. Pack your lunch pail. But no, I mean, I like when you go to some of these, you know, big time stadiums, a lot of them are bleacher seats. And I'm not saying the seats aren't nice and accommodating. I mean, I enjoy when I, you know, sit in them, but when I think of college football, I don't think of chairback seats. I think of bleachers. So if it happened, I would be, you know, I think it would piss off a lot of people because they're so used to the chairbacks, but I would be all for it.
Get rid of the vodka lounge at the Yum Center and turn it into a gym. You got to run on the treadmill for 5 minutes before you can take a piss.
You're exactly right.
Make the
right.
Fans work for it.
God, I'm getting so fucking old. Jesus.
It's Ohio. This is where you become classic Ohio. Can we talk about the fact that you and I both, we are 100% in on this, that every Ohio dad looks the same?
Oh, like, my God. Yeah, and I kind of pointed out to you, and then like we went somewhere and we were just walking around, and you're like, Dan, all these guys are a little bit overweight. They're a little bit round. They definitely bench like 250 or above. You know, they wear tight clothing. That's 100% what Ohio Dad is.
Yeah, very much like they're big guys, but not like in shape big. Like I think that they all, like they're all, they all look like they should be 3 or 4 inches taller, right? Like they're like 5'10", 6', a little bit overweight, but just kind of like large, too tight of a shirt. They wear like the shorts that are both somehow long, but also tight, like, and always sunglasses. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, 30 degrees and they're inside, they're wearing the sunglasses. Every Ohio dad looks exactly the same. They all probably coach youth football and encourage concussions. Like, it just seems like everywhere I went, I was like, that's, yeah, there it is. That's Chet, the Ohio dad. He's
And the sunglasses are Oakley brand, 100%.
Oh, yeah. Three different Oakleys all at the same time. Let's see here. Spooky Season David says, are you adjusting your season record expectations? I don't remember if you've done this recently or not. I don't know if we're talking about football or basketball here, but the answer to both questions is yes.
That's a hard yes.
Yeah, I mean, I would adjust my basketball expectations based on the injuries, and I would adjust my football expectations based on the fact that I think we're already mathematically, it's an impossibility for them to get to my preseason pick, which was 8-3. And now, I mean, with all the injuries, I know Scott Satterfield talked to the media on Monday and said, you know, we haven't had any COVID this week, but still we're going to be shorthanded again. I think Monty Montgomery is going to play because he never tested positive for COVID-19. He just had the contact tracing issues. So that'll be good to get him back, but still it's going to be, you're fighting an uphill climb these last few weeks of the season, even though the schedule is relatively easy. So the answer to both those questions is a resounding yes.
Do we only have 2 wins in football?
We only have 2 wins in football.
We're almost at Thanksgiving and like, we only have 2 wins, but like any other season, you'd be like, oh, the sky is falling. But somehow I like don't feel that terrible about it. It's such a weird thing.
Undefeated in the Atlantic Division, Dan. That's all that matters. Which will continue after this week because we're playing Virginia. So there we go. Let's see here. Davon says, who do you think will get more playing time between Gabe and Aiden? I think we've already pretty much hammered this out. I think it's going to be Aiden. If it's not, we got some issues.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing with Aiden. From the time we saw him last year, gosh, and he will have to make some drastic improvements, you know, from his freshman to sophomore year. I'm putting this nicely. He doesn't look like a back to the basket kind of guy. Yeah. He looks like someone that is, if it was me, I would have him solely concentrate on blocking shots, reboundings, putbacks. You know, I think if you get that from Aiden, you know, I think we're right now getting the most we can. But I think as far as his offensive repertoire, it looks like he has a very long way to go.
What's the biggest freshman to sophomore jump that Russ missed the obvious example, but I can't think of another one. Like Donovan Mitchell got really good at the end of his sophomore year. He was first team all conference, but he struggled. Remember, he got benched before that Indiana game in December. Like, we haven't had a whole lot of out of nowhere guys just kind of average or just downright bad as a freshman and then good as a sophomore. I can't remember anything like that, but we need that to happen with one of these guys. If it was Aiden Gahan, that would be pretty awesome. Let's see here. Smith says, what does Dan think of his meteoric rise as the voice of Card Nation?
Jeez, this guy needs to get out more. I'm flattered by the question, but I think we all know the reason people are tuning in is because of your stature here. But it's nice to add, you know, kind of dumb bits and pieces for people to chew on, I guess.
I like that you answered that seriously. That was I was expecting a joke answer, but you handled that well. Gil Bolberg says, and I'm assuming this is to me, if you don't get a job writing about college hoops this season, will you go back to law school or get a 9-to-5? Well, the good thing is I get paid to do Card Chronicle. So that's the job right now. The bad news is I had 3 jobs a year ago and now I've got 1. But I do have some other side hustles that I'm getting supplemental income for, which is cool. And I think a couple of other announcements that are going to be exciting, at least for me, coming up in the next couple of months, hopefully. But I will never go back to law school. Let me put that, I'll put that out there. If I wind up going back on that, you can use this line forever, like Lindsey Graham. Throw it in my face if you want. I will never go back to law school. I don't care what happens. That's an absolute last resort. Not going to happen. And I'd prefer not to get a 9-to-5 either, but I will milk this for as long as I can. But for right now, all's good. Could be better, but all's good.
I think I would do better in med school than I would law school. And that's coming from someone who would probably fail out in a week to both of those. But law school just sounds absolutely miserable to me.
I mean, Dan, I don't think you could pass seventh grade biology right now. I shudder at how you would handle med school.
God, just I wish I could just do like a test run for like 2 weeks, like just an experiment to see just how bad it would be if I got thrust into either of those situations.
I mean, law school, I'm sure med school is the exact same way for people who are, you know, more that brain. But law school was, it was the first time in education for me that was kind of humbling, where there were people who were like, I was like, man, they can cut corners and they can do it. I cannot. And it didn't go well for me. Law school.
Did you get like called out in class? Like, did they just call on people? Like, cause that's, those are like my worst nightmare scenarios when I'm just sitting there and, you know, I'm getting a lecture and, you know, they call on you for an answer. If that happens in law school, I wouldn't even show up to the first day, to be honest.
They do the Socratic method, which is, if you've ever seen Legally Blonde, it's exactly like Legally Blonde, where on any given day, like one or two people get called out for the case that you were supposed to have read or the cases you were supposed to have read and briefed, and they just get grilled for the rest of class. Now, some of the instructors, some of the professors would let you know the day before that they were going to call on you, which was awesome because then you could, you know, read the case and be adequately prepared. But most of the time, it was just a shock. And if you were one of the people who got called on the first or second day, like, God help you. Like, nobody forgot it. Like, everybody remembered that forever. It was bad. But I still get panicked just thinking about it. It was terrible. Not fun at all. Let's see here. Stephen Apple says, modern reporter, Mike, if you could talk about what you bring to the table in terms of just being the quarterback of this podcast, just talk a little bit about what that's like. I love to talk about questions. You know, it's not just me. We've got Keith and Danny here do a great job. I may be the guy who's handling the ball the most, but it's got to go somewhere else if you're going to have success as a unit. And certainly they've been able to advance this podcast as the, you know, the running backs and the wide receivers and the offensive line. And hopefully we can just keep progressing down the field and put as many points up on the scoreboard as we'd like to. And when all said and done, when the dust settles, I think we're going to come out on top.
Wow, what a fucking answer that was. So it's funny, like when I started doing this podcast with you, obviously I still don't know what I'm doing, but I really didn't know what I was doing at the first couple episodes. And sometimes I would just ramble on with my answer. And it's so funny. I could just like, as soon as I started rambling, it's almost like I could feel you turning the wheel back like to the middle of where the question was supposed to go. I was like, God damn it, I'm rambling too much. But yeah, no, you do a great job.
Let's see. Tweet What He Sees says, will Jordan get drafted? Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. He's getting, I tell you what has helped Jordan Warham more than anything over the last few months is everybody watching how Duncan Robinson was used in the playoffs and how effective he was. Because I think that the NBA is prioritizing knock down spot up shooters from the outside more now than they were, you know, 5-10 years ago. And that's what Jordan Warham is. If you saw the numbers from the NBA draft combine, he had 82 of the 100 threes in the shooting drills, which led everybody there. There's a video that has been, I won't say viral, but it's been going around the last couple of days of him working out and hitting 34 straight threes without missing one. I mean, he is the, I think, best catch and shoot guy available in this draft. I'm not saying he's going to be a first round pick, but it seems like everybody has him kind of in that 35 to 50 range there in the second round. So he's definitely going to get drafted. It's just a matter of finding the right situation for him.
Yeah. And his game is so much better suited for the NBA than it was as far as his role in college. Like you said, A, he's a knockdown shooter. B, he has a quick release. C, he can get off his shots. He doesn't have to be like perfectly squared to the basket. Like he can sometimes get off shots from like different angles and he's still deadly. And at Louisville, there was just so much pressure on him. You know, I mean, teams knew the scouting report. They were going to get up and crowd him, and he was going to be someone that had to, you know, towards the latter part of his career, find other ways to score, create off the dribble. And the NBA, he's not going to be, he's not going to be expected to do that. You know, you're kind of, like you said, like a Duncan Robinson, they'll probably run him off screens and try to get him open shots. So I will have to admit, when he first came out and said he was going pro, not that I didn't think he would be drafted. I just wasn't 100% sure the buzz he was going to get. I thought maybe there would be a chance that he fell out of, you know, the second round and not get drafted at all. But credit to him, he's obviously showed up in these, you know, draft combine drills, and he's getting a ton of buzz. So it sounds like he's doing well for his draft stock. So I'm excited to see where he lands on the next level.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a guy who carves a niche for himself and kind of hangs around the league for, I mean, a decade. And you're talking about him, you know, 10 years from now, like Jordan War is still making good shots. Never a star, never a guy who's playing big time minutes, but who just, he is so good at what he does that he's able to always be wanted by somebody. And I think, I mean, look, that's not a bad life to have. You play 10 years in the NBA, you're going to be set for life, and, you know, generations of Wars are going to be set for life. So hopefully he can make that happen. Last question here before we move on. Eric says, who replaces Greg Marshall at Wichita State? Why is it Brad Stevens? Look, Brad Stevens, you laugh. It'd be a home run hire, Dan. It would create waves across the college basketball landscape. If you haven't seen the news, by the way, I think Jeff Goodman and a couple other people are reporting that Wichita State is expected to part ways with Greg Marshall after, I mean, numerous reports of player abuse and just classic Greg Marshall behavior. I did love, before I answer this question seriously, I loved this morning seeing the reports that Thad Matta was going to be the likely interim coach, and then quickly those reports were dispelled. I don't know how well this is known, but I know that Mark Titus kind of dropped it on one of his pods. Like, Thad Matta's deal with Ohio State, he keeps getting his, you know, he basically gets paid his severance as long as he's actively looking for jobs. And so Titus was like, I've talked to Thad, and he's like, he doesn't want to coach anymore, but he wants to keep getting paid. So he's like, watch this. Every single year, his name will pop up as a candidate because he'll float himself as a job to make it look like he's actively still looking for work. And then he'll turn down the job. Like, that's what's happening here. Like Thad Matta's like, yeah, maybe I'm interested. And then, like, 5 minutes later, after it gets reported, like, no, I'm not going to Wichita State. I'm like,
God, what a clause. And that's like he's like the Bobby Bonilla of college basketball. Yeah. Like, what an absolute awesome clause in your contract. Yeah, I mean, it, obviously, when that report came out, the writing was on the wall for Marshall. I have no idea. I mean, with this short notice in the season, if they're going to just find someone to kind of hold the spot for a year and then maybe look in the offseason, you know, I have no idea. But I can't imagine they're going to get too big of a name to come to Wichita.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly... I know you said the writing was kind of on the wall. I'm surprised that they chose to part ways with Greg Marshall, just because, and look, I think I've even mentioned it on this pod before, it's the worst kept secret in college basketball that the Koch brothers were giving him a shit ton of money to stay in Wichita State. They do the same thing with Kansas. They do the same thing with a number of programs that they have money invested in. And that's why you saw Greg Marshall turn down a number of power conference jobs to stay at Wichita State over the years, is because on top of his base salary, he was getting a shitload of supplemental income. And I thought, because of that investment, that they would, you know, stick with him for, you know, he'd have nine lives in Wichita, and it turns out he doesn't. As far as who they wind up hiring, I think that I'm with you. I think that they're going to wind up staying in house for this season, just because we're so close to it getting started. Isaac Brown, I think, is probably the assistant coach who's going to get promoted there. But I think they could land a decent name, because they do have that more money to throw around than a lot of programs cut from their same cloth after the season's over. It will be interesting to see. I think it'll get revved up, especially if they overachieve in the MAC this year. People are going to start talking about Rick Pitino jumping. And I know that he did a big interview this week where he was saying, I'm ready to end my career here, and I'm ready to stay here and all this stuff. His name is going to get tossed around for some of these big openings that happen over the next 2 or 3 years, especially with programs like Wichita State that aren't, you know, historic powerhouses, and they're just trying to keep their momentum going. He'd be a great stopgap hire for them. I don't know if it'll happen, but get ready for that conversation to be had once the season ends.
Yeah, and I would be surprised if at this point in his career, but it's Rick, you never know. But I think he's happy where he's at in New York. I guess it kind of depends on the success that he has there. I do think he'll be successful, but I don't know. I just think where he's at, I think he's kind of at peace with what's going on. But another name has Kansas ties, coached in the ACC last year. just throwing it out there. I know things hadn't gone his way the past couple of years, but our guy Danny Manning, hey, I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh my God. Is Danny Manning gonna do this? I don't even know if he's got picked up anywhere, but as like an assistant, but my God, what an absolute catastrophe.
I do need to check on my guy Danny, see where he's at.
I bet he's like an NBA consultant, and I have not looked that up, but that'd be my guess right now. All right, we called you out last week for punting on Dan of the Dumps for the last like 17 times. Do you have a Dan of the Dump story for this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty random, but so yesterday, being a nice day, I went on a nice run. Why I do that, my son, he rides his bike next to me, and he kind of got far out ahead of me and crossed the street, you know, without me. And I kind of had to chastise him a little bit. And I was like, buddy, you can't cross the street. You don't know what these drivers are going to be like. And he's like, I look both ways and blah, blah, blah. But it kind of reminded him. He's like, have you ever seen anyone get hit by a car? And I was like, no. But then I was like, actually, yes. And I didn't tell him this. I actually hit someone with my car. One summer in college, I came home and it was just a normal night. I was going to pick up my buddy Rodney Vallejo and we were going to play poker at somebody's house. And he lived in Plainview at the time. And I remember I was jamming out to, it was either Dave Matthews or Coldplay, some sort of white boy CD. And next thing you know, I roll up to a stop sign and I look one way. I didn't come to a complete stop and just kind of skirt on through. And this guy just disappears underneath my hood. And I absolutely panicked. I got out and this guy, it's like he's grabbing his knee and he's like, and I was like, oh my God, sorry. I am so sorry. I was like, are you all right? And he's like, my knee, man, my knee. And next thing you know, these walkers in the neighborhood who were just out for a walk, they come over. They're like, we saw the whole thing. I was like, ma'am, I understand. I'm trying to see if this guy's all right. And he was like, man, do you live in this neighborhood? I was like, no, I don't. And he's like, where do you live? I was like, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, man, you got to slow down. And I was like, I'm sorry about that. He's like, all right, go ahead and get out of here. And I was like, are you sure? He's like, yeah. So, of course, I get back in my car, and the guy, Rodney, my friend who I'm picking up, literally lived one house over. So I pulled into his driveway, like one house over from where I hit this guy. And at this time, now there's like a whole neighborhood of people gathering in the street. And I call my buddy Rodney. I'm like, hurry up and get outside. He's like, I'm brushing my teeth. I'll be out in 5. I was like, get outside now. And I like look out my mirror and there's like, you know, 20 people like pointing at my car as I'm like sitting in the driveway, just waiting for, you know, the longest time for my friend to come out of his house. And he's like absolutely oblivious to what's going on. And then finally he gets in and I literally, you know, obviously go the other way. I was like, you won't believe what just happened. I was like, I just ran over some guy. And he's like, they oh my you. God. But yeah, so I'm giving my son these life lessons, but really I'm probably the one who, you know, is a bad example to be giving these to my kids.
I will say when we pulled onto your street on Friday night in Columbus, it was not pitch black, but it was kind of getting dusk. It was like getting close to 6 o'clock. And like we see a kid just fly out in the street from his driveway, and Mary's like, "Oh my goodness!" And I was like, "I'm pretty sure that was Cam, like your son." I was like, "Yep." And then we get closer, I'm like, "Yep, that was Cam, just flying out into the street." I was like, "Yeah, classic Sennard."
Yeah, he's a big bike rider for sure.
Big bike rider, just having a good time, just being wild, man. He is as like we talked about his athletic prowess. I did enjoy, we went to this like little kind of outdoor place with the soccer field on Saturday, and some kid tried to play him like one-on-one in soccer, and I watched him just fucking embarrass this kid for a solid 15 minutes. It was glorious. Like he's the real deal. Not like Dan.
Yeah, definitely not like me. Well, he's got his mom's genes.
All right. Well, we have two new reviews on the podcast front. Again, if you haven't subscribed to the pod, please do so wherever you find your podcast and give us a 5-star rating if you can and write a review if you can. It really helps us out. But we'll read two of the reviews. They're both very, very nice. We'll read this one from Freeverse33, who says, most podcasts are radio alternatives. In contrast, the CC podcast is the audio version of what the blog and Twitter account has become over the years. Full of Louisville nuance, it's sports-centric but manages to bring these unique local insights to everything they discuss from a porch perspective. Even with highbrow analytics from Keith Wynn, they still are very relatable from a fan's point of view. The random Dan in the Dump stories and superstitious charm of the banter gives you a feel of not only UofL sports, but of genuine UofL fans. The bonus, it sounds great at 0.5 speed in drunk mode. Keep it up, y'all. Do you ever listen to podcasts on alternate speeds?
I haven't. I mean, I've seen people do it. Some people recommend it, but no, I've never done it.
I always, almost always listen to it at 1.5 speed just to try to get through stuff faster. But if you do listen to anything at 0.5 speed, it sounds like just the hosts are just pissed drunk. And it's pretty funny for like 2 minutes. And then it gets a little bit annoying. But please don't listen to this pod at 0.5 speed. I'm sure it's terrible. Although I do talk too fast sometimes, so maybe you need to slow it down. All right, we got one more pod coming up this week. We're going to preview the Virginia game with Keith later this week, and then Dan and I will be back tomorrow to review whatever happens this weekend and answer more ridiculous questions. So until we talk to you guys again, thanks so much for listening, and go Cards.
Go Cards.